Oh, now it's all weird.
Yeah.
Well, we don't even have a... This is not the start of the show. This is just the...
This is the chatter.
It's the sanctioned possible...
How is your... did you check your gasket?
I did check my gasket. You got me all paranoid. And I was like, I had to... I had to pull out my phone flashlight to see, because I was like, it looked like it was a little bit inset. I was like, oh, maybe it's burned off, but no.
Oh, no, your gasket's still good.
Yeah, my gasket's still good. There was some big drama in my town. Somebody, there's like, gotta be like three or four different Christmas tree farms just in my town.
Oh, I bet.
But the big one, like, so Front Porch Forum, which is our little like Vermont version of next door. Today there was a thing that was like, to whoever stole a Christmas tree. And apparently somebody drove, it was like the biggest one, probably the bigger farm in town. Most of their lot is, you know, cut your own, and then they'll have a few pre-cut ones that you can go to the farm stand, to the tree stand, and buy. But they don't open until like maybe noon, but like a working farm. So they have workers there. And at like 8:45 this morning, so they're like, to whoever was in the silver truck that drove up and just grabbed a tree and put it in the back and drove away while my staff watched, like, I hope you enjoy your Christmas. We would have given you one if you talked to us and were really that hard up. Like, it was really sad, but just... It was, yeah.
That's too bad.
So I'm like, people are just stealing Christmas trees. But I've always wondered that too, because it's like, I mean, I wouldn't walk up to the pre-cut ones and steal one, but like, if you really need a Christmas tree and it's the cut your own, you could just show up at night.
Yes, like, you could.
It's not that hard.
And those trees are a lot more expensive now than they used to be. Like, I remember like when we started dating, they were like $25 maybe. And
oh, yeah.
This weekend it was $88. I'm like, wow.
Oh, yeah. Yo, Jesus, that's Christ. That's Brooklyn prices. So when I told you about when I sold Christmas trees in Brooklyn. This was my like freshman year job.
Uh-huh.
It's like my first winter in New York. One of the Christmas tree farms around here, like they're the ones who would cut them down and truck them to Park Slope every year. And so like I helped. And the markup was insane, because yeah, it would be like $80 for like a 4-foot tree. Like, as you got up, you know, of course you have the people in Park Slope who have the huge foyers and they want like the 8 to 10 foot trees, and I'm like, you're spending $150 on a freaking Christmas tree. And this was in 2001. Like, I can't imagine what the prices are now.
Yes. It's up for 2 weeks, people.
And then you have the people, this was the other thing that drove me nuts in New York. People would buy their Christmas tree around Thanksgiving, but everyone has the forced air, or like, you know, the radiators or whatever. They don't know anything about watering the tree. So their apartments are getting really hot. The tree dies in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They pitch it to the curb and buy another one. So you've already got, it's like people are selling Christmas trees.
Wait,
and
they buy another one?
They buy another one. So they're still selling Christmas trees up to Christmas. But the sidewalks are already lined with people's dead Christmas trees.
But how do people not know about watering a Christmas tree?
I don't know, man. Like, you'd think they would. Because this was not my freshman year. This must have been like sophomore, junior year. My friends drug home a street, like a discarded Christmas tree, to give to me. And I don't know how long it had been on the sidewalk. I don't know who had pissed on it. Somebody for sure did. And they came dragging it into our brownstone, like, Merry Christmas. I want this fucking tree. And they shoved it into my bedroom.
Oh,
no. And luckily, like, I had a fire escape door out to this little landing. So I immediately just shoved it out there. And then we like tied it up and decorated it. So it was outside. But yeah, I had somebody's discarded piss tree.
Wait, Tori, since you're a Christmas tree expert, I have a question.
Yes.
You know, if you buy, so like, I kind of secretly love like the really short trees, Yeah. Those little small ones. That you, yeah, you just, you know, it's a couple feet, maybe 3 feet yeah. tall. And then yeah. you like, you know, it's enough space, but not like a giant tree that's going right. to go nuts. Is that like a baby tree? Like, am I murdering a baby tree or is that like a...
I wouldn't say it's... So no matter any Christmas tree is getting murdered unless
right,
it's potted.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's just, that's just a small tree. Usually it's so that, cause when they do the farms, there's stages of growth because mm-hmm. people want different size trees.
Right.
So yeah, you're pretty much getting like early growth for the small ones. And then they have sections where they let them grow taller and whatever. And it's, and I say sections, but it's all kind of intermixed mm-hmm. because once one gets cut down, then eventually they put a new one there. So it's all, but it's, yeah.
Right. But I am murdering a tree earlier.
Baby tree like murderer.
A yeah. younger. Okay. I can't imagine. Like, I suppose there could.
It's like murdering
yeah,
a puppy.
Because I'm trying to think, yeah. like, sometimes you could get a tall one and then if somebody were to cut it, cut the top off of that, but then nobody wants.
Right. Yeah.
You don't cut your own top. Like, yeah. yeah. So.
Okay.
Yep, you're just getting a baby tree, and killing
it. You know
it.
What? I stand by it.
You could get a potted tree. I found the potted trees are also sad because, like, they don't last indoors. They're only a good idea if you're going to transplant it outside in mm-hmm. the spring. Like, you can't buy a Christmas tree and then keep it for years on end right. indoors.
Right.
No.
Like, it just dies. You have to be transplanting it, so. It's like, yeah, just kill it. Just buy the dead one in the first place.
I know there are people who like the fake ones, and I've never been a huge fan.
They don't smell right yeah. at all.
I mean, I do understand the benefit, but yeah. yeah. I mostly like the smell and the, I don't know, even the fact that like it's annoying to kind of like have to clean up pine needles.
Yeah. yeah.
But that's like, part of like, the.
Right.
Yeah. I love that. I also went and got, have you heard of the, oh God, I got to remember the name. So there's this like, it's like the Mercedes of Christmas tree stands. Cause you know how like annoying Christmas tree stands are?
Yes. God,
like there's the screw or yes. like they're always awful. So they find there's one brand and it's like $80 a pop.
I will spend it.
It is, oh my God, let me look it up. This thing is the best because it has basically claws that come up and they're attached with like metal wire, like heavy gauge wire uh-huh. that so they're moving at the same rate. And there's a crank pedal. So you literally, you set the tree into the stand and there's a little thing, but then there's a deep well for water. And it even has a water gauge that pops up. So as you fill it with water, it shows you how full. And when the tree drinks water, if you check, and if the gauge is level, then it's time to add more. But anyway, so you set the tree in and then you push the pedal and the claws come up all together and clamp in. And when right. It's like a bear trap. And so, and once it's like level, then you lock it. And if you're like, oh no, I didn't quite get it straight. I've got it at a weird angle. Then you just like put your toe under the pedal and flip it up and it disengages and you can do it again. It's
got to have it. Yeah.
It's so look up the name. This thing is fucking magic. I was like, so annoyed. I looked at it. I was like, this thing better be worth the price. And I bought it. And the first tree, I was like, I'm never, and it, you can tell it's like built to last. Like you will never need another.
Good. Cause yeah.
Yeah.
I hate this thing that we've been using for years.
See, Christmas. Hold on. This tree stand. Oh,
what the hell claw.
It's the Crinner tree the genie. I swear to God, this thing's like German or something. I will send you.
Yes, do. I'm going to get it. No, I'm not going to get it this year because I'm not going to take the goddamn thing out.
No, don't take it down. No. And they have different sizes. But, oh, yeah. I think I just bought an extra large one because it's like, I don't care. Like, I don't even have trees that are that big. But it was what – they were sold out at, like, Ace Hardware when I went. And I was like, I will just take whatever version of this you have and I'll make it work.
By the way, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Podjiba, the Podjiba Television Podcast.
We do talk about television. I'm a
comedy editor, Dan Hummel. With me, as always, are Podjiba Managing Editor, Tori Preston.
Hello, Dan.
Hi, Tori. And the Muppet Christmas Carol Burnett himself, Dustin Rolls.
Hello, Dan.
Dustin, this might be your first good name that you've ever heard.
Come on.
Did you watch the 30th anniversary interview with Roy Kent, Brett Goldstein interviewing the Muppets about the Muppet Christmas Carol?
I saw that it existed and maybe watched 10 seconds or so. And then it's like, I got things to do. So no, not really. No.
So you're just referencing the movie without the joy that the movie actually brings in your heart.
That's right. I'm not going to get into that. I don't want to be the villain tonight.
Are you not a Muppet fan?
The Muppets are fine.
Oh my God.
I'm not like, I don't go crazy about the Muppets. They're fine. I don't dislike them.
You used to say that about DuckTales. Maybe we need to do a Muppet rewatch.
Ooh, a Muppet. So like, then is it like,
no.
Is it the Muppet show? Is it a series of some of the movies?
I think it's grab bag, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be a lot of the classic show, but then maybe like a couple of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to, you know, next July.
Moving along.
I need something to watch. A lot of Muppets.
And there won't be anything left on the streaming by July.
Oh, don't push us into the topic of the night.
Dustin, we have a lot of time. We don't have to jump in yet.
We had a whole wood talk that wasn't about burning the wood.
Yeah, we had wood talk and Christmas wood talk.
It's festive wood. It's all wood in the end, though.
It really is.
All right, well... this is a weird episode because we don't really have shows. I mean, shows will come up, but we don't really have shows we definitely want to talk about.
No.
That's because they didn't watch White Lotus.
I am okay with that.
That's biggest show
by my decision
in 2 months, 3 months.
I think Wednesday is the biggest show. In 3 months.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But I still haven't seen it.
So I'm not like sure you should be judging.
The two biggest shows of the year I haven't seen, it seems like, though, except outside of Stranger Things, which were Wednesday and Dahmer.
Was Dahmer actually big? Because I feel like nobody watched it. Was it really?
Yeah, huge.
But everyone hated it.
Hmm. I don't know. Okay. I think the it's – stop, dog. Go away. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Penny has thoughts.
Yeah, Penny's like, you fool.
Well, Dustin's already going away.
He's already going. What was the... So, because like White Lotus has a lot of buzz, but and I guess Andor was the same way, where it's like, it felt like everyone was watching it within a very narrow circle.
Right.
Mostly Twitter pop culture people.
Right. And I mean, that's true of a lot of... That's true a lot of like the things that are kind of like critically acclaimed, but like end up, I mean, Andor, I'm sure has been seen by more people than White Lotus because White Lotus is on HBO. And even with the reach of HBO Max, it's still, you know, a much more targeted product.
I think White Lotus has been seen by more.
Yeah. Because I think Disney's, how many people actually watch Disney Plus? Although I think aren't they doing the Andor release schedule where now they're putting it on like Hulu and they're putting on like all the Disney owned properties?
Well, they did I think the first two episodes of Andor on ABC.
Yeah.
And then they put those on Hulu, but I think that's it.
Oh, okay.
So I think it was just to be like, hey, come to Disney Plus to watch more.
Well, and it was also around the time where they were doing the price change on the packages. So it was like the last push. Like if you want to get grandfathered in on the Hulu plus Disney, whatever, which by the way, I finally succumbed to the package without commercials. So I now have Hulu without commercials. it throws me off because Yeah, but now I'm watching like My Hero Academia and expecting there to be commercial breaks for me to go get snacks, and mm-hmm. like it blows through the breaks, and I'm like, what the? Oh, right, I pay for this now. My cartoons don't stop.
Oh, Tori, that reminds me, since you're a cartoon aficionado and Dustin is not, did you ever watch, only because I just saw a few episodes of this, I think yesterday, actually, for the first time, The Way of the House Husband on Netflix?
No, I've seen the ads. I've always thought about it. Was it good?
It's interesting because it's not, so I don't know. I know it's based on a manga. And the show was like highly anticipated, and it's a it's interesting because the way the animation is done, it's kind of almost more like motion comic.
Oh,
like it's not like a full. I mean, you know, it's obviously animated, but it's like a lot of it is like you're almost like looking at a panel that's moving,
right.
rather than like a full show. So that I'm sure that there are some people who for whom that will not be great.
It's a little jarring,
but. In terms of like the tone of it, it's fun. And because it's so the premise is it's a the main character is a retired like legendary Yakuza gangster who got married and now is like a stay-at-home husband. And but he approaches everything with like the same seriousness
Of like mafia.
So like chopping food or like making lunch or like when he goes shopping for deals and and the other piece is that like every so an episode itself on Netflix is like 18 minutes, but that's like six like 3 minute episodes, so it just tells like little bite-sized stories of you know following him, and it's slowly kind of like unwrapping like some of the backstory and like like the point I'm at, I don't think they've only just started to hint at like how he actually met his wife, but like she goes to work and then he's like there's one episode where he was cleaning the apartment because like her boss was going to come over to visit. So he's cleaning the apartment and he got like a new Roomba, and then the Roomba starts like messing up and he's yelling at the Roomba, and then it ends up like between like that and like he spills something. So it ends up looking, the Roomba starts dragging like the red
whatever
paint,
it is.
So it looks like it's like there's blood everywhere. And then they arrive and he's like, I'm sorry, I have a new disciple who like failed me, and then the Roomba just goes back to its base and like starts charging.
Oh, that sounds really cute.
It's fun. I think the not having seen all of it, but just having seen, you know, a couple episodes, if you don't like the motion comic style, I could see that being tough.
Right.
And then the other thing is that like it's been entertaining so far, but the joke is the same. It's just like, you know, it is that premise is the show.
Yeah. So unless there's some plot that's going to like progress,
I mean, like,
it.
It's been entertaining to this point, but like it'll have to expand a little bit.
To keep going.
But, and then there's a season two coming, I think in January. So.
Yeah. Speaking of, so I've been watching Chainsaw Man because JS recommended it. Mm-hmm. And I think JS thought that I had read the manga and I hadn't. So the whole thing with Chainsaw Man is like this episode. So the season that we're in, like there's a break and there's going to be like a little hiatus and it comes back. So a couple episodes before the break, there's this huge shift, like paradigm, like massive paradigm change, like something that you don't see coming, like characters that you thought were major characters, everyone dies, like somebody that you thought was a huge character dies and then turns out isn't dead and is more powerful than you expected, and like crazy stuff is happening. Like the bad guys have always been after the Chainsaw Man's heart, which like makes no sense. Like why would they even know he was around? It's a very like bloody, violent, weird show, and it was really, really fun to see that shift. But I had no idea it was coming because I hadn't read the comics. And so JS was like, you know, oh, it's the episode where everything changes. And I'm like, what? Like, what the hell was that? Oh, you had no idea it was coming. I was like, no. So now I really want to read the comics, but I'm also really enjoying watching this show where I have no idea what's coming. But yeah, it was great because it's the kind of show where like it starts out one way and you're like, oh, it's just this innocent character who like gets a bunch of powers and then like ends up working for this agency. And it's kind of like the camaraderie and like they're taking out bad guys individually and like, you know, oh, they're, you know, he's learning how to work in a team and he's weird. But like everyone's, it's like, it seems very innocent given that it's, a, you know, like an action, fairly bloody, gory kind of body action show. And then, yeah, this episode, we're just like, everyone dies, including the main character. And you don't know how that's going to work out. And you're just like,
oh,
what the, because the whole thing is the main character has morphed, melded with a devil. And so like, that's how he got his powers. And so even though for a while, like in the episode, they kill him, the bad guys kill him and then are just dragging his torso around because they need his heart. But it's like, as long as his torso is there, they can, I think, give him blood and regrow him, sort of. I don't know. So I think he'll probably be fine, but at the moment he's dead.
Okay. That's on Hulu?
It's on Hulu right now, yeah.
Okay. I have been meaning to check it out, but...
But yeah, don't judge it. Like the first episode feels very one way. And then after that, it's kind of like you settle into what you think will be the paradigm for the show.
And then
and that will be very, yeah, that'll be very delightful for a few weeks. And then, then the show hits the fan.
There is something interesting in that the way that like anime can kind of shift its paradigm very quickly. That is kind of fascinating to me. And, also, Dustin, you might have to reconnect because it says you can't record. Oh, there he goes. Dustin might be back. We'll see. Or we might have to actually stop and restart. But what I was trying to segue into was, well, no, it reminded me of, I mean, I mentioned this, I think, before recording. Or was it, is it already on the show? Is there any, I think it's before
recording. I don't think it was on. Yeah. I think it was something pre.
Yeah. Because I've just been catching up on kind of shows I haven't seen that are about to premiere. I watched Alice in Borderland, which is a Japanese show that premiered in 2020 on Netflix. It's based on a manga. And it is, it's kind of like the easiest way to describe it is like, it's the Japanese Squid Game. But you know, obviously didn't take off in the way that Squid Game did.
Right. But was still very popular. Just, yeah, it didn't kind of become.
Yeah. It didn't become like the global phenomenon. About. It became popular, but I really enjoyed it. But one thing that really struck me about it and one thing that made it very enjoyable was that they took kind of like wild shifts in the narrative, that are very anime or manga esque, It's if you're not used to it, it can be a problem because it'll feel abrupt.
And it feels abrupt because if you're used to television structure, like when you're reading the manga, it's fine. You're right. Like, oh, yeah, no, this is how things progress. Like you'll suddenly take these like big zigs and zags. Right. But like, yeah, when you're watching a show, it feels so strange to be like, oh, yeah, we're on episode 3. Like, this person I thought was important is gone now or whatever.
Right. Oh, Dustin's back.
I don't know. It wasn't my internet. It was just I was getting a white screen on Riverside.
All right.
I'm here, though.
You're here.
Hang on.
Are you done with talking about cartoons?
Oh, I can't change that. I was talking about... Alice in Borderland.
Okay, well, you can continue.
Which is not a cartoon. Although one thing
sounds
that
like
is,
a cartoon.
No, it's a. How dare you, Dustin?
Yeah, is it a video game show?
No, it's manga based on a comic.
But it's live action. You watch Marvel stuff, Dustin.
You watch Squid Game.
I like Squid Game.
So this is like Squid Game.
Yeah, it's Japanese Squid Game.
All right, fine.
There's more nuance to it than that, but that's the reductive way to explain it to
him. We gotta get him to watch it.
But one thing that is interesting is that there are characters that come in and they kind of like rightly save them for like the second half of the season that feel very like ripped from an anime or a manga, where like even like the way they behave and like the way that like their wardrobe and their some of them have tattoos and like the way the tattoos are, like, it's like, yeah, it's very like over the top in that way. But they kind of make it work. Like it can, it's tough. Cause whenever you tread on that line, it can be cheesy, but yeah, like they kind of hit the right spot where it's like, it's a little cheesy, but it's like, it's still fun.
It still feels of a piece with
it feels, the yeah, production, it feels consistent with the world, right, and not just like, this is absurd.
Right. Cause it's tough. And yeah, then sometimes it's really interesting to see those adaptations that are live action, but are so, consistent and devoted to the source material that, yeah, it almost looks like they're doing a live action cartoon.
Right. I mean, like Cowboy Bebop as an example. yeah. I mean, which again, we both enjoyed, but like, I know that there were times where like, it's a little too close to the cartoon.
Yeah. But, and again, I think we talked about it when it first aired, but it was that thing of like, it didn't bother us because I've seen other productions that aren't, they're not Hollywood, they're not American.
Right.
But I've watched Japanese or Korean or, you know, right, like shows that have done that based on comics, right, or cartoons.
Right.
And I think it's weird for American audiences to see that happen because we don't, other than literally Speed Racer, mm-hmm, is the only American example, right, I can think of somebody who made an actual live action cartoon.
Right.
Something that looks like the cartoon.
Right.
It's just so unusual and kind of uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. Cowboy Bebop was this year.
Oh, my.
No. No, it was last year.
Was it?
I think so.
Hold on. Hold on, guys. I've been playing this game with myself all...
I think it was late last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're right. It was 2021.
But November, so...
Huh.
It definitely feels like... I mean, that was also part of this year. Cause it's
I
also,
definitely thought it was like July of
it
this
was
year.
Part of this year.
It was this year.
It's still 2020. So.
There are so many shows I've been like looking up going like, and then yeah, shows I work. Yeah. Everything I'm convinced happened this year happened last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then things that, yeah, I think happened years ago. It was like, yeah, oh no, that was like 4 months ago.
Yeah. We'll get to it in I think one of our holiday specials, but
yes,
there are a lot of shows on the list that are surprisingly from this year. That, yeah, I had no idea.
Honestly, almost everything was, yeah, shockingly, yeah, from this year.
And it's like shows that I watched and enjoyed that I can't believe was earlier this year.
Yes.
But
everything's fine. Time is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. So, Dustin, did you want to tell us more about White Lotus? The show everyone has watched except, right, for us, apparently.
I mean, it was good. Well, yeah, it was better than the first season, I think. Although it took longer to build momentum, but once it did, wow, it was really good.
So there in the, I read your recap, like your finale kind of wrap up.
Yeah, yeah.
And you said something interesting, which was it was slow to get going, but the last three episodes were outstanding.
Yeah.
And like, how many episodes was it? Was it 8 episodes?
7.
It was 7 episodes. So 3 out of 7 isn't bad.
Right. I mean, the first 4 were fine. Not, they just weren't like, right, but you have to, you know, it was just set up.
Yeah.
You have to develop the characters and the storylines and then pay it off. I mean, it's a 7-hour movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting because when you really think about like shows that you watch, if you could say that like this season had 3 outstanding episodes, like on almost any show, I'd struggle to say that. Like it's, that's, you know, like,
right,
if you genuinely think like that's not a bad average at all, especially for a 7 episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everything can be reservation dogs. Yeah. But so they'll be back and you'll still watch.
Yes. I mean, it's one of those internet shows now and I work on the internet, so I watch the internet shows for whether or not I like them, which is so why I'm still struggling through Firefly Lane. Oh, God.
You're still watching that?
Is that an internet show?
It's a really popular show. Yes.
Oh, all right.
It's not,
but
like
they canceled it.
They just ended its seconds. Right, but they gave it like 18 episode second season that they broke into two halves.
Oh, yeah, right. It's Manifest, so you'll have to come back for the half of the. So, if Twitter goes away, how does that shift how you interpret what shows are internet shows? Do you have other like places where you are like, okay, the conversation is happening about this show?
Well, there's Pajiba and Vulture and Vanity Fair and maybe Facebook. I don't know. I don't really check that anymore. But
are the Television Without Pity forums still open, Dustin?
Yeah. They are not.
Will they reopen if Twitter goes down?
If Twitter goes down, then, you know, we get to be tastemakers again.
Reddit?
Whatever that
means.
Are
you going to Reddit?
I used to. I don't do it as much anymore, but it's hard to keep up with all the television and Reddit because you have to, like, find the subreddits for
everything.
Every new show. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just, and then they get canceled, and then you still got, like, threads coming into your line from, like, a show that you watched three episodes of, you know, 5 years ago. And some jackass is like, oh, my God, this show is amazing. You didn't see these connections?
Dustin, the show is called Lodge 49, and I'm right here. How dare you? And I watched all of it.
That's going to be me in 5 years, about 1899.
It might be,
yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird to think about, like, how do you figure out what everyone's talking about when there's no more water cooler? But you're right. Maybe you can actually just become the tastemaker, and then you wouldn't have to watch Firefly Lane. You could pick a show that you do like and make the conversation about that.
Like Manifest.
Yes. You love Manifest. You love every episode, talking about every single episode individually.
For up to me, the internet show would be Fleischman Is in Trouble, but it is clearly not.
Oh, yeah. How was the back half of that?
We just got to episode 5, and the show is just outstanding. Just every single episode is outstanding. I love it. I love it. I love it. It's like the best. But I don't think it's getting a lot of traction.
Do you think it'll make it onto your top TV shows of the year?
I do think it'll be there. Yeah.
Coming in your in this feed sometime during the holidays. And definitely not being recorded after this episode.
Yeah, so definitely not.
Don't even worry about
that. This is a long-term spoiler.
Yeah.
This is not something that we're interested in immediately.
Right.
Did I give too much credit to this week's SNL, or was that like a really, really good episode?
No, it was a really good episode.
Yeah.
It was possibly – I mean, the last two have both been really good.
Yes.
And I think just in terms of – I don't know. This week's had a lot of sketches that felt like they knew what they were. They got in, they got out, you know, they kind of like hit the mark and then left. And it wasn't, I don't know, very few of them left me like wanting, or being like, I don't think I was, the only thing I was really kind of disappointed was maybe the cold open.
The cold open.
I didn't love the cold open, yeah. But, I don't know, outside of that, it was very enjoyable.
Yeah, I also think the past two weeks, like, you had really charismatic, versatile performers, mm-hmm. like that you could do a lot with. And I wonder if that's like
this
just
week's
a joy to wait for.
I think this week's SNL was more sort of like a Steve Martin Short, with, you know, accompanied by the SNL cast.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, yeah, they just got to write to them, right. And they're so, right. It's like they know, right. It's so easy to write for them because it's like, okay, well, yeah, we can do a Father of the Bride thing and we can do, you know.
Oh my God, that was so good.
Right. And the Christmas Carol
was perfect.
Yes.
And just the fact that, like, they were allowed to, it's interesting because, like, I love Martin Short as a performer, but, like, it's weird how, like, there are times where I feel like it doesn't work, like his style doesn't work. But when you have to be really broad, and like being on stage live is where you have to be the most broad, like it really comes across and is fun and in a And I don't know, just in, even like in the, I'm trying to remember the How to Treat Your Man sketch, which was probably one of the less excited, interesting ones, but mm-hmm. just like his, like I could see how that one, his energy, like in the room, you're laughing, even yeah. if like it doesn't translate as well on TV.
I mean, that's the yeah. thing with him is like, you know, and I think that's why some people have a very like, might be lukewarm on him or kind of like, you know, because he will sell whatever it is.
Right.
And it's, and like, I've always really appreciated that where I'm like, I don't always necessarily find the character, you know, like it's like Jiminy Glick or something like that. Mm. Like some of it's brilliant, but like, you know, it's like, that can be really annoying, but I'm also always astounded at how hard
right.
Martin Short can sell something like that over right. and over and over again consistently.
Right.
And I think that's, yeah, it's just fun to see in action. Yeah.
I like Martin Short, but I love Martin Short with Steve Martin.
Because I think it's the pairing. Yeah. It's like right. something yeah. about like he makes Martin Short more palatable, sort right. of, but also like Martin Short draws out more of the, I mean, not right. that Steve Martin isn't kind of wacky right. on his own, but there right. are really, there's a good balance between
but the like two. Steve Martin gets to really play more like baseline straight man or, yeah. or at least lower energy, even if yeah. he's still being absurd. But
yeah.
Also, Dustin, how dare you give Train Car a 5? That sketch was
no, beautiful. I said 5, but didn't I give it a the
you
twist
said 9
of 9?
For the twist, yeah, but it's it was it
up
was
until
than
the
that.
Twist. Okay, that was the I really think that might have. I don't remember giving a 10. The last time I remember giving a 10 was the Pete Davidson Dead Poets Society. So I don't. Mm-hmm. know that I've done that since then.
I need to go back and rewatch that because I can't remember if that was actually that good or if it was just that you like Dead Poets Society.
No, it was the shock. It was just the utter shock of that. Yeah. Like, what? And
it
I think
did, it was the shock of that one was pretty amazing.
Yeah. But in this one you had the shock and then it just kept going and it just got more outlandish until right. like the the horse kicked his head off.
But again,
so good.
But again, it's another example of like the benefit of the pairing where like the heightening of the sketch just of like the violence of it works fine with just Martin Short. But then because mm-hmm. he's like so high energy and like freaking out, then like yeah. for Steve Martin to be there and just be like, oh, they can't see me. You look like a real jerk.
Yeah.
Is like that's what like really helps elevate it.
Yeah. 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 And it was interesting. Cause I think Vulture I think it was Vulture wrote a piece about how like, it's just pairs don't work as hosts on SNL. And I'm sure like there's an argument to be made for that, but I really did not mind it here.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
They haven't done that many pairs. I mean, no. I went and looked at the history and it was like, I mean, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler are the last two. And that was like 7 years ago.
Right. And I don't really, I mean, and part of it is also that like I was sold on them doing the pair from, you know, from the monologue where it's like, it just for the gag alone of doing like, here's how many times Steve Martin has hosted any right. Martin Short. And it was just like, from that moment alone, I was like, I'm in. That's hysterical.
And their dueling eulogies were very good.
Yeah.
Entertaining.
Let's see if Austin Butler's a letdown after the last two. Maybe not. He seems I like Delvis.
I don't know
lot.
What to think about him. Like as a performer.
I don't know who that is.
He's
the
guy
the Elvis.
Elvis.
I don't know if he's done anything else that I've seen.
Is that the Baz Luhrmann movie?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. It's really good, Dan.
Don't say it so.
I kind of stopped.
It's Baz Luhrmann.
Look, I mean, I went through my Baz Luhrmann phase like everybody else. It just happened to be, you know.
What was right? your Baz Luhrmann phase?
Oh, it was Romeo and Juliet and then Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge,
and then,
yeah.
And
yeah,
then I'm like.
That was it? No Strictly Ballroom? No, Strictly Before.
I was too young for Strictly Ballroom. Like I was the right age for Romeo and Juliet and then the excess of Moulin Rouge and being like, this is great. And then, I don't know, and then around Australia or so, then I was like, do I need to see these
Never did watch Australia. Strictly Ballroom, I grew up on, so I loved that. Romeo and Juliet, I was the right age for, except that I was too much of a bitch. I was like, I was such a cranky high schooler. And so, like, I remember going to the movie theater with all, like, the teen girl, like, my friend, they were my friends, but they were being such, like, Leonardo, like, in the seat. And I was so angry. I'm like 16. I'm like, this movie is fucking trash. Hated it. Which is absurd because it's a wonderful
movie and
a wonderful adaptation of the play. Yeah. So I didn't I had to go to college and literally I was in a Shakespeare adaptations film class and we watched it. And that was when it clicked. I was like, isn't trash teenage heartthrob bullshit. Mm-hmm. This is like really, this is a wonderful movie. But yeah, I was so off. I was just so annoyed being in that theater with like my friends, like swooning around me that I was like, I can't.
Okay. Wait, I want to see what other Baz Luhrmann things I haven't watched. I didn't watch Australia. I didn't watch Great Gatsby. I did watch some of The Get Down. I enjoyed I watched the first half of The Get Down and really enjoyed it. And then never return for the second
half. I think that's exactly what I did. Yeah,
it's still there. It's still there for me to watch someday.
For now,
Elvis. Yeah. And then Elvis is the. So you know what? I take that back. I only missed half of his stuff. So
yeah,
Elvis.
Go
is
back
not
and watch Strictly
overly Luhrmann-esque.
Is that true?
I think so. He's a really good Elvis. There's a sequence in the end where they sort of splice between him and the real Elvis, and you don't know who is who. You're like, wait, you just don't know because he's just really good.
Yeah. Okay, wait, Tori, if you wanted me to watch either Strictly Ballroom or is it called Cuban Fury?
Oh no! But that's not fair.
Two dance movies. Only one can survive.
Okay, because I actually think so. You will enjoy Cuban Fury more just for the comedy chops, like for the people in it.
Right.
But that's not to say that actually, like, Strictly Ballroom is a dance movie that has a lot of comedy in it, unexpected comedy in it. But it's like Weird Australian. Like, this is really, like, this was his, like, Weird Australian movie. Yeah.
Strictly Ballroom or Step Up to the Streets?
Step Up to the Streets.
I've never seen
Step Up to the Streets
has a single
rain dance is fucking
amazing.
It's so good.
Look, all I'm saying is if you watch Cuban Fury, you get to see Nick Frost and Chris O'Dowd have a dance off in a parking lot.
Hmm. That does sound pretty good.
That sounds funny, but
I'm sorry, it's not raining.
Yeah.
It's just like somehow
Olivia Colman's in it.
It's
dancing
even better
ballroom.
That they're dancing in the rain. And I don't like, I'm not a big dance movie person. Like I saw Shall We Dance. It's fine. The original. It's fine. The international phenomenon from Japan.
Did you ever watch Center Stage?
I did watch Center Stage.
Yeah.
I've seen all the Step Up movies, though.
I have not seen a single
Step Up
movie.
I've only seen two.
I'm sorry. Weirdly.
They're really good.
Oh, man. Well, I think this means that we need to have when Magic Mike 3 comes out, we need to do a live recording of just our react. We'll, like, watch it together.
All right. Not a movie podcast, but you know, nope. Why not?
Well, we can make an exception for a dance movie once, maybe.
Yeah. Wait, are there any dance shows that we could watch? Bunheads.
Bunheads was great.
I never watched.
There was a dark ballet one on AMC or Stars. I forget. It was canceled for one season. It was really good, though.
It
was like something. It sounded like dark, like the title, even.
Yeah.
I mean, for reality shows, like, I don't watch a whole lot of competition shows, but for a while I was really into So You Think You Can Dance.
Hmm.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I did enjoy America's Best Dance Crew.
Nice. Did not watch that one.
Wait, is that the one that, that's the one that the first season was the Jabberwockies, right?
No idea.
I think so.
I don't remember.
Anyway. Look, Dustin, the Jabberwockies were in the Step Up movies, Dustin, so you've seen them.
Okay, wait, yeah. Okay.
They have the masks.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And then, like, Shaq has danced with them.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. They're mostly Asian, largely Filipino. They're good.
Great movies.
But they were on a TV show.
Yeah, right.
You could watch it.
So, Westworld is getting pulled.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah. So it's canceled and getting pulled.
And they're pulling Minx, aren't they?
Well, Minx was canceled. Are they? But that was Showtime, right?
No, that was HBO.
No, that was HBO.
Well, I know it's on. I thought it was a Showtime. Did it not air on Showtime? It was only HBO Max?
Yeah.
It was a Lionsgate production.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they were about, I think it was, they were about to finish filming season two.
Yeah.
And they canceled it and are going to pull it from the service. They're also pulling the Nevers, which it turns out is not going to return on HBO next year.
Despite being very heavily promoted as being part 1A. And they did, I'm pretty sure, like, the second
they
half
did film the second
was
half.
Filmed and done. Like, there's nothing like they could have just
why
aired it.
Don't right. you just yeah? Why don't you just air it?
So in that case, I think they get more money. I think they're looking because they're talking about going to these fast channels, which I'm assuming are whatever, like the free TV or whatever.
Right.
Well, fast I guess means the short version is ad supported online.
Ad supported. So they're going to get more money selling a first window. Mm-hmm. So they sell the Nevers and it's like, okay, well, you're getting the first half as a second window because it's already aired, but you're getting the premiere rights for the second half of the season.
Okay, so we are going to get to see the rest of Nevers.
So that part, so the Deadline article that announced all of this was a little bit like, we think this is happening. Mm-hmm. That's not, like, all we know is that the Nevers and Westworld are pulled. They don't have a new home. We don't know actually what's going on. You can kind of anticipate with the Nevers because we know that that show has already been shot. So it's like if they're going to move it somewhere, yeah, you do the whole thing. It'll probably become a premiere for another platform. Westworld is interesting because it had been canceled. I don't think there's another platform short of Prime that would throw enough money. Like, it's not like Westworld is going to get resurrected for a fifth season. I don't think.
Yeah.
So they're buying the rights to it as a library, as a catalog show. And the viewership went so far down on that one. You're really capitalizing on just the name recognition because it was so popular early on and HBO promoted the hell out of it.
Right.
Well,
it's interesting. So this Deadline, I'm just looking at it now, and this Deadline article, which kind of broke a lot of this news, is talking about how the Warner Brothers has talked about that they want to enter that ad-supported space. So it might be that rather than, I don't know if there isn't obviously an option for them to sell it somewhere, but they might also, they launch their own, they'll be like, hey, new channel with Westworld and the Nevers and whatever stuff.
What they don't need is another channel. We don't need any more channels or streaming networks. You need to just, like, cool it and make the what you got work.
Well, and the other problem is you can't keep hiking up prices but reducing the amount of programs that are there. Like, you know, HBO Max absorbed – essentially, there was that time when DC had a streaming platform and like Swamp Thing was one of the premier shows. Like, that was where that went. I'm pretty sure, I haven't double checked, but I'm pretty sure Swamp Thing is not on HBO Max right now. Like, if you want to watch Swamp Thing, you have to go to like Apple TV and buy the episodes. Like, so we're seeing this consolidation of these platforms, but without all of the content that made them. And when you lose those shows, like, we don't have physical media. And if they're not going anywhere else, how are you? But
it's also insane for, like, HBO was doing well. HBO was $15 a month. It had a lot of subscribers, and then they launched HBO Max. They didn't raise the price. It's still $15 a month, and now they're making like an extra, you know, 50 shows a year. So they're paying a shit ton more, and they're getting the same amount. I mean, I don't know what the subscriber growth was, but
yeah,
all of these streamers are not. I mean, this is going to happen. They're going to lose shows. Some of these are going to go away.
Yeah. I mean, what HBO was in an interesting position because it was before HBO Max, when it was HBO Go and HBO Now.
Right.
You had the two platforms. One was the first one that came out. Go? I don't remember. But it was the one that was tied to your cable subscription or your satellite subscription.
You still had to have an HBO. So,
yeah. You logged in. Yeah. Yeah, so you logged in using that, but you didn't pay anything for it. It was essentially a free app, assuming you were already subscribed to HBO through this other channel, through this other manner. Then when they launched Now, that was the paid version. And then they combined them with HBO Max. So it was like a really messy launch. But on the other hand, it was – and, you know, Max obviously took the place of Go and Now, but also – had more content. Like, they were bringing in, you know, it was the Showtime shows or Cinemax shows, and, you know, they had other things going on in there, plus like the full libraries. But when those first two came out, you didn't have as many. Like, you had a lot of the tethered streaming services, but you had a lot of channels that were still struggling to figure out how to do untethered. So tethered being you had to have the login. You had to be a cable or a satellite subscription to use them. And that was the whole thing, was because you have these channels that want to get into the streaming space but don't want to lose their business with the satellite and cable. So it was really tough to navigate like those kind of deals. Mm-hmm. And that's why HBO did it first with tethered, then managed to do the untethered, then managed to do a combined. Like, it took them so long, a lot. And so by that, you know, in that way, it was a messy launch, but they were one of the first ones to do it. At the time, it seems like a great business plan. You're right. Really, at that point, only competing against Netflix, Hulu, Amazon. But now we've got more independents like, you know, Apple, in, you know, things like that. But, and now everyone came out with their own. You've got AMC and, you know, just
Peacock.
Peacock, and is it Paramount or is Paramount Peacock? Like, what is the, I don't know.
Paramount has their own, yeah.
Have their own.
But they're basically Showtime, yeah.
Well, yeah, they're going to pull Showtime in soon.
Yeah. Yeah. And CBS is now.
Well, they're part of Paramount.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But first they were all there. I mean, so we're seeing the collapsing of these.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, but yeah, I mean, so yeah, at first it seemed like a great idea. HBO could kind of blaze the trail in terms of networks doing what the streamers, the standalone streamers were doing. And now everyone's doing it. And it's like, yeah, I do not have enough money, which is what everyone predicted 10 years ago. It's like, eventually you end up in the point where it's like, why don't we just have a cable subscription again?
Right.
Because I could get everything.
Right.
Or the streamers could look at the number of the subscribers and create a budget and make that many shows based on their budget instead of trying to anticipate or grow, you know, another 30, 40 million subscribers a year.
Which is right. But they, when you start out, like, you, if you've just launched, you need to grow. So they're going to front load. So those first couple of years, they're on a growth. Right.
Right.
HBO is in a position where, I mean, Max on its own isn't that old. Like, this is, I think they're kind of, Zaslav notwithstanding, like, I think he's coming in and screwing up a lot of stuff. But aside from him, they're at the point where they probably would need to reevaluate their business strategy if they're not seeing the growth that they had put into it. Some of these other streamers, like, I think Peacock is maybe starting to get to that point. Like, some of these other guys are either still new enough that they know they're going to be in the red for a while. But yeah, it's going to hit all of them. And we're still at a point where the the deals in place for the writers and director, like the actor, the streaming rights, like how that in terms of their contracts, what their residuals are, what that looks like for streaming only shows. Like that's not, that has, I mean, that's kind of what the writers, I mean, writers strike or writers guild has been dealing with, right? Like in terms of like, it's not the same as network.
Right. I mean, the big problem, well, there are a couple of big problems. One is that the, and there's a, from the creator side, there's a lack of transparency in these kinds of streamers because you don't know how many people are actually watching your show.
Right.
So everything is kind of built on this model of based on like how many subscribers these services have. And then that kind of like sets the rate for like what your residual is. But even though that money is much less than it is for, you know, if a show back in the day got rerun on broadcast TV or even rerun on cable and syndication,
right.
That's still all money that the streamers can look at and say like, this is how much it will cost us to keep this on service for another year. Right. So it definitely seems like that is gonna, you know, that will probably lead to things kind of quietly disappearing.
Which is already happening.
Which is already happening.
Animated shows are getting pulled. I mean, that's one of the other things that HBO Max is doing. Like these shows that we're talking about might get placed elsewhere.
Right.
But I mean, the Discovery Chronicles, like there's shows that are just going.
Yeah. And the Warner Discovery part of it, that's definitely, there's a little bit of a difference because there's, I'm not going to be very fluent on this, but like there is like a window for Discovery after this merger or for the company after this merger to write off shows where they basically say like, we lost money on this. So we're going to disappear it and then we will take the tax write off. So they're deciding
that
the tax write off is worth more than keeping this show around.
Which is exactly what Warner Brothers Pictures did. Or, you know, DC did with Batgirl, with the movie.
Right.
There was merger. They had a period to write it down. They just were like, okay, it's worth more as a tax write-off than actually trying to release it.
Right. But that comes into also like the second part of this, which is that like the problem that they're running into is that as big as these, no sympathy for giant conglomerates, but in terms of like the space that they are fighting in, even like a company like Warner Discovery or Paramount or NBC Universal Comcast are small compared to Apple or Amazon or Netflix. Yeah. And like, they don't have the right. I mean, Netflix is now starting to course correct, but in particular, but Amazon and Apple don't have, they have so much money that.
Well, and that was what was so interesting was you had these kind of old school media, like, you know, TV and movie studios that were trying to play catch up to new media to, you know, they're trying to figure out how to do what Netflix and Amazon and Hulu were doing.
Right.
Hulu being interesting because they started out owned by networks, but they kind of were their own thing. But, you know, it was really at, you know, for 10 years, everyone was chasing Netflix. Mm-hmm. And now we're kind of, it's crossing the streams, but it's everyone has, the water has gotten muddied. I mean, Apple may be a huge company, but they're new at producing content like this.
Right.
Amazon, the same. It's just that because they're such a big company, they have that backing. It's like Amazon can afford to, you know, throw a ton of money at Rings of Power, although they're now taking the loss on, like, they're reducing their Alexa department. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because like the media that they're having a problem with is their devices.
Right.
The companies, that was kind of the divide and they were all moving toward each other. They kind of needed that help. And yeah, I think Netflix no longer is the front of the pack just because they've been outplayed in a way, like we're seeing the flaws with the binge model,
right?
The massive expenditure on content, you know, they can't keep buzz mm-hmm. anymore. You know, but and likewise,
there's another problem too with, I mean, Netflix is already, I think, starting to run up against the edge of this, but most of, if for the companies where their focus is on growth, most of the growth is outside of the US. And mm-hmm. so that means, that means gearing up, not just exporting American shows, but really spending money in, especially Asia, in Europe, in South America. And Netflix has been successful at this, but like the other companies are trying to play catch up in that arena. And so it's also a problem of like, you know, just from like a domestic standpoint, they're definitely killing off a lot of stuff and like culling shows and pulling things, but they're part of that is, I mean, they haven't, it's hard to know because it's not reported on in the same way, but I'm sure that they are, as they're doing this, they are upping spending elsewhere.
Yes.
Because going international is how they actually make money, is where they're going to make, you know, at least the next segment of their viewership.
Yeah. Or they could spend less money and make only the shows that are going to attract huge audiences, or good shows, or subscribe, or that will attract a lot of subscribers. I just think there's all of these streamers. I think they all were in a race to become, like, because they all thought we were going into the streaming era and we have to be in front, and no one was ready, and they just sort of like started throwing shit, and I think they produced a lot of unnecessary stuff.
But it's also harder to anticipate what will be a breakout hit. Mm-hmm. And yes. I think that that's the other thing that streaming gave us was, and I think where Netflix was such a challenging competitor to a lot of these guys that were starting off, because, you know, what succeeded on Netflix wasn't the stuff that you would always expect. And because they were already getting so many shows from other countries or whatever, like, you would never, HBO Max was never going to have a Squid Game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there are right. things that we got accustomed to by having something like Netflix, or, you know, even Hulu would bring in a lot of other, you know, that. So now it's like these streamers are still trying to do the traditional thing, something like HBO Max, where it's like, okay, well, they still have linear channels. They're still producing, like, you know, what they think will play for people who have cable, but then trying to think of what will work to get people to subscribe, you know, to the app if they don't have cable.
Right.
You know, what is the additional value that we can add? You know, and it's, yeah, I mean, you look, HBO Max, their solution, HBO's solution was, okay, well, we'll make another Game of Thrones show. Amazon, okay, well, we'll make a Lord of the Rings show. We'll throw mm-hmm. a bunch of money at these things that, in terms of IP, should be no-brainers, but
right.
they're not the original. They're
right.
So,
and HBO Netflix, just probably does just as well at a fraction of the cost with White Lotus.
Yeah, and you hear us talking, you know, and like, we, you know, we're like, okay, HBO is amazing with Succession and Barry. Like, they have some of the better shows, but
Mayor,
like,
of Easttown.
But how many people actually watch them or talk about them? Are those the shows that get people to subscribe? And you have to deal with churn. So that's the other thing that these guys, it's like, you have that hit show, people will subscribe, maybe right. use a 7-day you know, free trial. Week or whatever, trial week, and then watch it and cancel. Like,
right.
they don't sure. want the churn. But part of this is, if there are shows on every single platform that we want to watch, people will add and cancel and add and cancel and just try to hit what they can.
Right.
Not everyone is too lazy to remember to cancel things like me. But there are,
HBO has always been really pretty good about having like a must-see show on Sunday nights, like at all times.
But it depends on your taste, because they're not always, like, I don't watch The White Lotus.
Middle-aged white guys, They got everything I could want every Sunday.
Well, and that's perfect. But, you know, and I think that's the other thing is there's still that confusion of like trying to chase the whatever 18 to 34, like, you know, what would be the demographic online, mm-hmm. but you're not really dealing with ads. Like, why are you chasing for young people? Older people have the income. Like, and they're probably too lazy to cancel. You want them to subscribe to everything and just save it.
Right.
And share those logins with their kids. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's no answer, but we're going to eventually run up. We just need cable again. We just need streaming cable.
I mean, it's interesting, Dustin. And Tori, what one thing that kind of like keeps rattling around in my head is like the idea of like, so what the fact that Warner Discovery has now been, you know, they're now removing shows very publicly from HBO Max. It feels like the danger, or one danger, feels like if you're a show creator, you know, would you want to go to them? Because like knowing that this is the way that they treat shows, and it's not that shows don't disappear off of other services, and like it's you know, there in some ways it's kind of a return to, you know, the pre DVD boom, where like not every show got a home release. A lot of stuff was just it aired and then that was it and it went away. But you know, the promise of streaming was that it'll all be there for you forever.
Yeah. Right? So, and you sign in and you get access to it.
Right. And so the fact that promise is now being broken, I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is, because obviously if you're going to HBO proper, that has like a cachet and there's a promise of, you know, curatorship that they still have. But
And you have to think of the people who went, you know, maybe started production deals 12 months ago.
Right.
When it felt like a more sure bet.
Right.
And now we're sitting here going,
right.
Well, shit. Right. You know, for sure I wouldn't have sold my program to HBO now.
I mean, the one place it feels like the place that Dustin's describing, where it's not, they're just producing shows that they believe in, that feels like, you know, that they will, you know, that they're not overspending, is Hulu, and even more specifically like the FX branded slice of Hulu, where but again, that's like it's under a specific creative officer who has a very specific vision, who's like always been about like we're only producing so many shows, but it's all shows that we really believe in,
and they're great, but they're also not marketing them well, they're not getting them into award, you know, I mean, like, there are so many FX shows. I mean, we've been talking about Reservation Dogs, and it's like, that is one of the best shows on television.
Right.
And it is not, it has for two seasons not gotten nominated for anything. And is that a failure on the part of, you know, I mean, it could be the awards committees, but it's like, you know, is FX, is Hulu, is essentially is Disney not putting the marketing spend or putting the, you know, the publicity behind these shows to put them forward.
Right.
I mean, the Disney shows are getting nominated, you know, like the money's going to those. So I, you know, it's like FX is making great shows, but I don't think that they're as sure a bet, just given that they, you know, they did the highly publicized FX on Hulu, and then that's no longer a thing, really. I mean, FX stuff is still on Hulu, but it's not FX on Hulu.
Right.
Like, but I don't know. And, you know, and the way that, you know, I think this is another area where, like, it's not happening as rapidly as whatever's happening with HBO Max and how that's going to become, but no, Disney, Hulu, ESPN, like that corporate conglomerate is going to keep consolidating.
Right.
And they're doing it with, in terms of packages, but I think that's going to, over the next few years, like they're still figuring out that strategy.
Right. And even Disney raised their prices.
Oh yeah.
But I think that all of the streamers are going to, so, you know, broadcast networks air what, 15 shows a week 15-17 original program. So I think the streamers are still going to be doing, like, they need to focus on 1 to 2 shows a week all year long. And that should be enough to sustain them. And I think Netflix probably, even Netflix probably just does 1 or 2 shows a week, right?
They launch a lot of stuff, but there's only one or two.
Right.
It's binge. And so that's only 1 or 2 like really big titles per month.
Right.
You know, and maybe it's, you know, a movie and a show, or it's, you know, 2 shows and whatever, but it's like.
Yeah. Well, I think the point is they're going to have to contract all of it. We're just going to have less content, which I think is necessary for business and for viewers. There's too much. I hate losing the Minx because I love the show, but I think we need to sort of like, get rid of some of the lower performing things.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's also...
Who decides that, Dustin?
But it's, you know, I think what kind of going back to what you were saying, like the idea that these shows would always be there for us to catch up on. I mean, the reality is, when there's so much new content coming out all the time,
yeah.
How many of those shows that you've always thought you'd go back and catch up on, like, right. You know,
have the you only incentive to do that is if there's another season
coming up. Yeah.
Right.
And at this point, these guys are tapping out at 2 seasons.
Right.
But knowing that makes it hard to get invested in the first place.
Right. Mm. But in the meantime, we are all paying as much or more than we used to for cable.
So much. I'm paying so much money for 2.
Or some of us still have cable.
Yeah, I have cable. I have streaming cable plus all of the streaming channels.
I kind of miss cable. I just want to go back.
Me too. Yeah. Just
bring it back. When I was redoing when I was finally signing up for the Disney Hulu ad-free package, I was like, oh, should I just do with live TV? Like, should I just give up? But I was like, no, because I'm still going to be paying for HBO Max, and I'm still going to be paying for Apple, and I'm still going to have all the other guys.
Mm-hmm. Just spend the cable and the DVR, and I'll fast forward through the commercials, and those are good times.
Oh, man. Remember when you could just put in your VHS and you get all the local commercials?
Mm-hmm. The little static line that goes across your screen when you're fast forwarding. Oh, good times.
Anyway, it's exciting times in TV, even though, did we talk about any show? We talked about a couple shows. It's fine.
Yeah, we talked about
Cartoons.
And we talked about cartoons, even though Dustin refused to participate.
Kept logging off.
But yeah, we will be back next week, and then we will have a couple weeks of holiday specials, which are definitely not being recorded tonight. Nope. And next week also. It's new content. It's new content. What do you want from us?
Content, yeah. It's just going to be short and delightful.
Yeah.
Just little presents.
Yeah.
Stocking stuffers.
Exactly.
Non-denominational stuffers.
That's right.
Stockings are non-denominational, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will be back then. Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Chimneys know no religion.